the four groups, that was the, you know, monks, nuns, laymen, laywomen. If he saw the four groups off in a distance, he would make a point of going to them, bowing in obeisance and praising them, saying, I would never dare to disrespect you, because surely you are all to become Buddhas. That was his practice. Among the four groups were those who became angry, enraged, and mean-spirited, and reviled and cursed him, saying, this ignorant monk who takes it upon himself to announce that he does not disrespect us and assures us of becoming Buddhas, where did he come from? We have no use for such empty, false assurances. Thus he passed many years, constantly being cursed, but never becoming angry or enraged, and always saying, surely you are to become Buddhas. When he spoke this way, some would hit him with sticks, tiles, and stones. But even if he ran off and stood at a distance, he would continue to cry out loudly, I would not disrespect you. Surely all of you are going to become Buddhas. And because he always spoke in this way, the extremely arrogant monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen called him never disrespectful. This monk was nearing death. From the sky he heard 200 million billion verses of the Lotus Sutra, this very sutra, which the majestic voice King Buddha had previously taught. And he was able to receive and embrace them all. Immediately he obtained the purity of vision and of the faculties of the ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind described earlier. Having obtained the purity of these six faculties, his life was extended for another 2 million billion myriads of years. And he, what did he do during that time? He taught the Lotus Sutra everywhere for people. Then the extremely arrogant monks, nuns, laymen, laywomen who had slighted him before and showed contempt for him and given him the name Never Disrespectful, seeing him with the power of great divine faculties, powers of joyful and eloquent speech, and powers of great goodness and tranquility, and having heard him preach, all at that point believed in him and followed him. So that's the story of Never Disrespectful Bodhisattva. And it says he went on to transform multitudes of tens of millions of billions, enabling them to dwell in the state of supreme awakening. After his lifetime, he met 200 billion Buddhas, all of whom were named Sun and Moonlight. That must have been confusing. And under their dharma, he taught this Lotus Sutra. So this is the practice we've been talking about, of looking at everyone as if they were your child. They were your flesh, and wanting, opening your heart to everyone you meet, as if they were your own child, and all the good wishes that you project in that direction. And this was a precursor to that practice. What a deal, what a practice. He got stones, pebbles, tiles, walls thrown at him. But he kept that intention. Maybe that helped him keep his intention. So As we talked a little bit about yesterday, another big topic in the Lotus Sutra is this idea of skillful means, that the Buddha's one vehicle, maybe the one way that Buddhas teach, all 100 million billion of them, is to use skillful means, whatever will work in this moment, according to these causes and conditions, whatever will liberate is the way Buddhas help teach liberation of all beings. And we saw that practicing metta, practicing friendliness, is like putting on a coat. You put on a practice like you're putting on a coat, so that you can develop a friendly nature. And you take on some of the practices that we talked about, even as a mother at the risk of her life watches over a child. We greet everyone as if they were our child, as if they were our flesh. We greet everyone as if they were a Buddha. We talked yesterday about devotional practices, the services that we do here. Every time we turn towards the Buddha and do a gassho or a prostration, that's a devotional practice. Actually, most people that are Buddhists in the world have a largely devotional practice. They're devoted to a Buddha that will help them into the pure land, or they're devoted to Avalokiteshvara that can reach out with her compassionate arms. So they, with devotion, they call on Avalokiteshvara. So we do a lot of devotional practice here at Santa Cruz Zen Center, even though we think our practice is just sitting. It's quite a bit of devotional practice. In the Diamond Sutra, we learn other practices. The emptiness literature started appearing about the same time as the Lotus Sutra. 100 BCE, and then the first few hundred years of the Christian era, AD. This idea of emptiness arose. Buddha's teaching that there is no inherent self. There is no intrinsic core that is Patrick or Gabriel. No soul. That the things that we identify with names, with thoughts, our ideas, our opinions, these things that we say or form, are in this moment the sum of all of the causes and conditions right now in this moment. And that there's nothing, there are so many causes and conditions in this moment that might create a Ton, much less a Brian, or the candles. There's so many that we can't possibly know them all. And if we were able to sort of say, we all depend on a nice temperature to exist. You know, if we peeled away the temperature bit and every day was 150, we wouldn't exist. Even though that's just one thing that we depend on. And there's myriad things that we all depend on that if that one thing were not there, it wouldn't exist in this way. So our practice with emptiness, our compassionate practice to really meet the true self, really meet the truth, is just to say, no, that's not it. And that doesn't mean it's a no that says that's false. That's, I'm being deceived. It's the no that says, whatever I'm landing on now, whatever I'm naming this, is there's so much more to it that I can't possibly understand. That if I say no, that's not it, I'm holding it just a little bit less tightly, and maybe something else can be revealed, which will allow me to be a little more intimate. A little more intimate with this. That even our naming it, even saying Tan, limits, you know, what all of that wood and varnish and trees is. Even when that monk who spoke here and talked about the joy that comes up in him when he sees his daughter, even he, you know, wanting to truly be intimate, wanting his daughter to have the boundless existence that she has to also look at his daughter and say, no, that's not it. With a compassionate heart, he wants to wish boundlessness on his daughter and not limit her by the qualities that she reveals to him that he likes. Maybe she won't have to hide some of the qualities that she has that her father might not like. So what a compassionate practice that can be with everyone we know. I have an idea about all of you, you know, based on the relationship we have. Can I meet you and really say, no, that's not it. I really wish for you your boundless existence, not limited by the idea that I have about you. That's what the Diamond Sutra asks us to practice with. I spoke a month or so ago about my trip to Michigan with my friend Dan. And we went on a canoe trip down this beautiful small river, Platte, the Platte River, that empties into Lake Michigan. And when we went to rent the canoe, they gave us a choice of the easy trip, the easy 2-hour trip, or the more difficult. Or actually, when you signed the waiver, it said, for experienced canoeists only, the 4-hour trip. Now my friend Dan is an advanced canoeist. I don't doubt that. I know he's been on a lot of canoe trips. He told me he studied it in college. and I think that's not all he studied in college, but I think he did study outdoorsmanship, and canoeing was a part of it. And he's got some certification on canoe. And you know, there was nothing that was going to keep him from the 4-hour trip. It sounds like Gilligan's Island. They were just going to go on a 4-hour trip. And whatever presented, he could get us through. And he knew that I'd never been in a canoe before, but I was going to have an easy job. He was going to have the hard job. But so we got, you know, it said advanced canoeists only. But we signed the paper and we got our canoe. And it was a beautiful river. We had not been in that canoe more than 3 minutes before my efforts ended us in the water with the canoe filled with water. The whole river was very shallow. You know, it would hold a canoe, but you know, so it was like we just had to stand up. It wasn't like we were, you know, in danger. But and you know, in that 4 hours, we were in the drink a lot. And I take full responsibility. But also I feel a little, as much as I heard from Dan that it was my responsibility, I also was pretty innocent. You know, I've not been in a canoe. Dan is an experienced canoeist. So I also have a certain innocence about the whole thing. The beauty of this canoe trip is that as difficult as it was on our friendship, the whole last hour was the canoe trip of our dreams, of what we thought this canoe trip might be. The whole last hour was a very peaceful expanse, wide river that, as you imagine, two people just rowing along. So it was a canoe trip designed to repair friendships, because no matter what happened those first 3 hours, it was so nice the last hour that all was made up. We had lots of stories to tell the people, the canoe rentals, you know, like one, why are your clothes all wet? And, you know, kayakers kept, you know, we'd be in the drink and the kayakers would smile and row by. But anyway, that was an example of, you know, this idea that had crystallized in both of our minds that, you know, the river held so much more than we gave it credit for, that we had to let go of it to really understand that. We did a little chanting about that today in the Genjo Koan. When Dharma fills your whole body and mind and you think it is already sufficient, you think it is already sufficient when Dharma does not fill you up. You think it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. So Dogen was pointing to the Diamond Sutra here. With our Dharma eyes, with the eyes of compassion that we chanted yesterday, we see so much more. And one thing that we allow ourselves with these Dharma eyes, with these compassionate eyes, is the causes and conditions are infinite, and we can't know them all. And so if we just loosen our grip a little bit, we can become a little more intimate. And then this very paragraph goes on to talk about sailing, which is in a boat, which is a lot like canoeing. So the River Platte, really, at the very end, was the cream of the long river. The Diamond Sutra talks about attributes. Signs, you know, whatever we land on, whatever thing, you know, what are the characteristics that I've composed in my mind that when I see them, I say, Brian, you know, whatever attributes there are, they get us stuck. That's why I said in the beginning the Lotus Sutra or the Diamond Sutra with emptiness asks us to work with this with barriers to our intimacy, to our being connected. And attributes can be these barriers because whatever it is that we say, you know, that's what Chuck is, that's what Nanette is, that's what my child is. Whatever attributes or signs that let us know what that person is to us, that's a barrier to our intimacy. What do you think, Subhuti? This sutra is a dialogue between Buddha and one of his monks, Subhuti. What do you think, Subhuti? Can the Tathagata be seen by means of the possession of attributes? Subhuti replied, "No, indeed, Bhagavan. The Tathagata cannot be seen by means of the possession of attributes." This having been said, the Buddha told the venerable Subhuti, "Since the possession of attributes is an illusion, Subhuti, and no possession of attributes is no illusion, by means of attributes that are no attributes, the Tathagata can indeed be seen."
Can you read that last line again?
Yeah, it's a stickler. "Since the possession of attributes is an illusion, Subhuti, and no possession of attributes is no illusion, by means of attributes that are no attributes, the Tathagata can indeed be seen." So, one way to look at that is, whatever way you're using now to identify the Tathagata or your child, that's not it. Whatever, you have to decide for yourself what no attributes are. Maybe no attributes is just, I'm going to try not to I'm going to try not to indulge in the whole cascade of ideas that come up in me when I think of my daughter. I'm going to try not to indulge in the whole cascade of memories when I see my roommate. Maybe that's what no attributes might mean.
So but using attributes that are no attributes, right? That's the line?
Yeah.
So that is implying that there are some attributes that are free of
attachment.
This error in our way of seeing.
Yeah. So it's you know, whatever your mind is going to alight on about that is something you're going to have to say, no, that's not it, too. But whenever we have those flashes of insight that might be non-perceptual, something that appears before us, and we know deeply without knowing concretely in our mentation, whatever that was that has moved you and touched you and made you have the experience of no separation with the entire cosmos. That was a no attribute that allowed you to see the Tathagata.
That's an attribute, that's a no attribute.
Yeah. So it's not, we're not going to be able to land on that, or in your practice, you're not going to be able. Have we seen the Tathagata? And was there anything that let us know that that was it? And if we can think it, that probably wasn't it. It was something that was experienced not with this conceptual mind, but this more integrated being, body, mind, heart, that is always at home, connected with the entire cosmos. That's the body and mind that we identify the Tathagata with.
I think of that line in the Heart Sutra, all dharmas or all phenomena are marked by emptiness. All things have the attribute or mark of emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like an attribute that is no attribute.
Thank you. And maybe that's it's marked by the no, that's not it. And if that's how, if that can be developed in our practice, that's how you engage with the Tathagata. That's how you see the Tathagata with by that mark.
So there's this whole thing about production and non-production. So is that kind of a similar thing? That things aren't produced. It's this very kind of hard to grasp kind of concept that I've been sort of struggling with.
I too have been reading the third turning, and I've forgotten exactly how how Tenshin Roshi uses those terms, production and non-production. So I'm sorry. Chuck.
So essentially we're dropping the story because we have a story about everything.
Yes.
We have our ideas about everything.
Yes, yes.
That's a really difficult problem.
And that's our story, and it's related to what you're experiencing with your senses, that what we identify as the object, but it really isn't the whole story, and dropping the story allows for that intimacy. In the same way, the Diamond Sutra talks about how bodhisattvas save all beings, and you've already blown it if you've identified that person as another being. That you really do have to drop the story, you have to drop the self, and you have to drop identifying the other by its marks. Maybe using only the mark of emptiness as an attribute. Chuck does this. You do this pretty well. So this talks about the bodhisattvas giving a gift, and Chuck and Gabriel and myself and Stan just started coming to the homeless garden, one story that could be told is we are a charitable bunch and we're going to be helping out an organization and we're going to be helping other beings, people that are having a real hard time. We're going to be helping homeless people. And but that idea really is dispelled the first time you go to the garden, because you can't really find what you think might be a homeless person. It's we know they're there, and there's a lot of them, but there's also a lot of, we're feeding 40 people, or we're preparing a meal for 40 people every week. So it's 40 people that some of them are staff, some of them are college students that are doing their community studies projects, and their professors that are there doing talking about community studies. There's people there doing their community service, so they don't have to pay traffic tickets, and everybody looks pretty much the same.
That's interesting. That very thing came up to me in thinking about that. How when I first went with you to the garden, I had this preconceived idea of even what homelessness was, and then found out in very short order that there were people who were professionals who had lost their job and then lost their home and then lost their car or whatever. And it's a real similar experience to going to the jail, because you show up and you have this preconceived idea of what these people are. And very quickly, your ideas get dispelled, because one, you start looking at yourself and your judgments and your ideas, and you see that they're not true. And so that helps you to drop some of those ideas, to see that, I was way off base. And then for me personally, especially at the jail, I start having a significant shift of making myself empty. Go in with no ideas, and I always find myself going in with anticipation. I expect this, and I want it to be like that, and And every time I see that stuff coming up, I have to drop it. And it's a real good practice because there's a lot of repetition in it. The same ideas coming up again and again. Of me wanting it to be a certain way and then learning that I have to accept it however it is. And so that whole idea of dropping the story, boy, it's a real work in progress. But I see that, you know, we have our judgments and we have our ideas, and it's really nice when they get dispelled a little bit to shift your thinking.
Yeah.
To drop the story a little bit.
I mean, and if you held on tightly to that story, you wouldn't have the groups at the jail. You'd just be frustrated, and you know this isn't working, and you've got to find somebody else. This can't be done. And so if you want a connection, you have to use the attributes that are no attributes. And you know, at the garden, at the end of the day, Chuck just says, jump in the truck, you guys, we're going to sell tomatoes. And he gets people from the garden there that help him out at the farmer's market. You know, there's Michael with the flowers in his hair. And then there's, you know, tattooed Michael and the heavily pierced Mary. And they're just selling those Molino Creek tomatoes to beat the band. And, you know, showing, you know, the heart of Molino Creek Farms is with no attributes. So, you will have your own Buddha field. And it'll contain dry farm tomatoes for 10,000 billion years. So this too, emptiness. An emptiness practice cultivating the I, the Dharma I that is compassionate, the Dharma I that can appreciate the mark of emptiness. This too is one of Buddha's skillful means in teaching us, in teaching liberation from suffering. Catherine would close for years with a poem, and for years it was Mary Oliver. I don't think she ever read the one that I'd like to read. Buddha's last words. Buddha's last instruction. Actually, I'll read Buddha's last instruction from the Diamond Sutra, which is a four-line verse. As a lamp, a cataract, a star in space, an illusion, a dewdrop, a bubble, a dream, a cloud, a flash of lightning. View all created things like this. Pop. You know, he's addressing this to Subhuti, who he now calls a fearless bodhisattva. We have to be fearless to drop our story about our own flesh, about our friends and family. We really want to liberate suffering, and we fearlessly, with an open heart, have to keep saying, not this, not this. So he tells this last verse to the fearless bodhisattva Subhuti. As a lamp, a cataract. I think a cataract is, you know, the in your eye that distorts your vision. And so what you see is distorted. As a lamp, a cataract, a star in space, an illusion, a dewdrop, a bubble, a dream, a cloud, a flash of lightning. View all created things like this. Thank you. It feels good to, I don't know how to say this without saying so, being so cold. It feels good to live with someone in our stories. It feels good to always have the same romance. But it takes real fearlessness to help liberate all beings from suffering by dropping that romance, dropping that story. For the sake of salvation and liberation of all beings. And that's the fearlessness. And I don't think a person has to be cold and insensitive to do that. I think it all can be held. And especially when you find that your story is really part of the suffering, you know, then it's a little easier to be fearless, or that's actually some insight. So viewing the people that we love most as a dewdrop that's going to be gone in a few hours, or a bubble that depends on such tenuous causes and conditions, and also to be with them, with that Avalokiteshvara heart. That's our practice. That's our fearless practice. Make yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send up the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, the Buddha lay down between two solid trees and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs, disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed, yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. Thank you. I've enjoyed looking at all of this and talking about all of this. And at the break, Chuck will talk about the rest of the day. It'll be a little shorter today, but we have a few projects to do. And there's still opportunities to explore this heart on the cushion at our meals, when we're cleaning up, with each breath. May we continue this practice, this fearless practice of bodhisattvas, dropping our stories while holding on to the universe. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow.